paying in the first place. This is like advanced fucking AA. You're not gonna hear this anywhere else. You know what I mean? You're gonna hear this shit. You're not even gonna listen to it. It's gonna roll over. I've heard that before. But you're not really parsing what they're trying to tell you. What they're trying to tell you is that you're so fucking insane that you're gonna come to believe that a power can restore you to sanity, but you don't even know how insane you are. Because you read a book, it says you're selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You step on the toes of others and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. But you realize ultimately that at times in the past, you made decisions based upon self. And that your self will run riot, though you usually don't think so. Usually don't think so means for the first 20 years. Because the way you get a new perspective on what this disease is you got to live life as a sober alcoholic. You live life as a drunk alcoholic. Number one, you don't think you're selfish or self-centered. And number two, you just don't think you're selfish and self-centered. You don't think that way. And even after you stop drinking, you don't know what it means to be selfish and self-centered because you think you're basically a good guy. You think you're basically, like my grandmother used to say. Anybody ever have a grandmother in here? Grandmothers are fucking great. You know, you can steal money from you, you can do anything you say. Russell, you know, you're basically a good boy. You know, Hitler's grandmother said, you know, you're basically a good boy. You're a good boy. You know what I mean? So, you know, I mean, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. You're not gonna try to stop drinking or even become entirely ready to stop drinking. Or, you know, you're not going to know the freedom from drinking or even worry about the freedom from drinking to stop drinking until you realize that you're powerless over the drinking, you can't stop, and it's making your life unmanageable. So how do you know that your life is unmanageable because all you do is think about getting laid? That's the most important thing in your life. Or buying a new car so you can get laid. Or get a new job so you can have money so you can get laid. Or, you know, or romance or anything that has to do with vanity. How are you going to even realize how selfish you are? How are you going to realize that every time you wake up in the morning you say, if only I had this? How many times do you think an alcoholic in a day, in a single day, thinks a thought? It only takes 1 second. If only my boss treated me better. If only my wife treated me better. If only I had a new car. If only I could lose 50 pounds. If only I had that blouse. You know, I mean, I'm constantly buying shit I don't need with money I don't have to impress people I don't like. How many times do you think in your life you've woken up in the morning, you've driven and said to yourself, if only. If only, then I would be what? Okay. So if you're constantly telling yourself, if only I had this, I'd be okay. And you're convinced of that because your alcoholic thinking is the only normal. It's the way you think. If you're convinced that the same thing is good, but if you really had money, if you had $1 million, that would really solve your problem. A lot of guys with $1 million drink themselves to death, you know. A lot of movie stars die of overdoses. So you say that, see, whenever you say, if only I had this, I'd be okay, what you're really saying to yourself is, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. So how many times do you say to yourself, I'm not okay, I'm not okay? What effect does that have on a human being? Carl Menninger said in the book, Man Against Himself, he said, alcoholics are men and women who are, you know, want to destroy themselves. They're restless, irritable, discontented. They have that drink. Unless and then, until they can take a few drinks, which, you know, basically makes them feel okay. Our problem is we can't handle sobriety. It's not the drinking. It's the sobriety thing that kills us. We can stop the drinking. We can't stop the thinking. How are we going to figure out what we have to become entirely ready to get rid of? Our old ideas. And by the way, the result is nil unless you let go absolutely. How do you let go, and what the hell are you supposed to get let go of? I said to my sponsor, what does it mean, selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking? We step and tell us what is it, retaliate, usually without provocation, but we know we've done something in the past that puts us in a position to be hurt, so alcoholic is self will run right, though we usually think so. What does that mean? He says, Russell, what that means is you don't give a shit about anybody except yourself. I said, I like the way the books book. I like the way you said it, you know what I mean? You know, because I'm sensitive. I told my sponsor I was sensitive. He said, no, great artist is sensitive. You're just touching it. You know what I mean? So how do we even learn what the real problem is? If the first step in getting out of jail is learning what the selfishness looks like, and we don't think we're selfish, because we never do anything wrong, because it's not our fault. You understand what I'm saying? It's because I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have raped your dog and killed your wife if you didn't call me an ass. I mean, it's I never, and by the way, if it happened to you the way it happened to me, you'd feel the same way, because there's only one way to react to that. How, when you are a fucking crazy nut, and you see things a certain way, and there's no way of budging you off of that because you're absolutely sure of that, and you come day and they tell you these stupid things like, go to your sponsor, say I'm broke, I need money, and I'm worried, and what am I going to do? He says, oh, I know what the problem is. You need to start making coffee for the group. You say, I don't think he's listening. I mean, they would have understood. My wife's treating like shit. Oh, yeah, I know. I think you ought to help that newcomer. You know, it's like there's no listening, you know, because I'm talking real problems, and they're talking, they're like speaking in Czechoslovakia. How do you get this thing? How do you even understand how nuts you are unless you go through what they say, repeated humiliations in the final question of your self-sufficiency, sort of like what you went through with the booze. But you got to go through what you went with, you got to go through what you went through with the booze or the drugs, and the pain and the agony over and over again, repeatedly. You got to go through that about sex. You got to go through that about romance. You got to go through that about money. You got to go through that about everything in this world that you think is important. Because Bill Wilson said the real problem with alcoholism is unhealthy dependencies. And an unhealthy dependency is dependent upon anything except for God. Because if you think anything will fix you other than your relationship with God, the bottom line is you'll always be running after that thing that you think will fix you. And sometimes you won't get it, and then you'll be frustrated, or you'll be pissed, or you'll run over people that don't give it to you, or you'll get it, and then you worry about keeping it. And you'll never be able to keep it because, you know, over a period of time, the car becomes old, the wife becomes old, the confused. Everything changes, and you'll have to have more and more. And with people like us, it only lasts for what? It's like a half-life. So you get a new wife, and it's great, and the honeymoon is great, and that lasts. How long does that last for? What, a month, 2 months, 6 months, whatever it is? You got a baby, you got to go through bills, and then you're looking at the other blonde or whatever. How long does the new car thing, how it always wears off. And you're back in the same jackpot again, feeling like shit. You know what I mean? And how do you even understand what the problem is? And you think the problem is that you have problems. And you have absolutely no.
What do you have absolutely?
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta kill her. She's gotta die. But you have absolutely no problems. The only problem you have is your brain. That's it. That's the only problem. You see, you're upset because you're upsettable. You're upset about the $500 that the bounce check for $500. And you're upset with the guy and you're pissed off with the guy who bounced his check for $500. Can't sleep at night, or you're always thinking about it, you're always talking about the guy. It ain't going to give you $500 back, but your entire life is ruined because you bounced the $500 check. And the only reason, and the bottom line is, you never realized that if it didn't bother you, you'd be okay. But you don't even understand. If I say to you, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? You don't even understand what I'm talking about. Because how could it not bother you? Because you don't know of any other way, because if you're an alcoholic, you're alert. Everything that's going on around you, every possible thing, you're like every possible slight, you know, because deep down inside, even though you're telling everybody how great you are, your basic attitude about yourself as an alcoholic is that you think you're pretty much worthless, and you know, that's the bottom line. You know, you're just not as good as. You always have to prove yourself to other people. God forbid. I mean, the worst thing that can happen in an alcoholic's life, the worst thing that can happen to a person that feels like he's secretly insufficient is to be treated like he's secretly insufficient. Talk down to you. That's why you don't like people talking to you and telling you what to do. And being up here, you see, you're like in the back room saying, who is this asshole? There's at least 10 people saying, this guy's such a piece of shit. I ought to be up there. But here's the problem. If they ask you to be up here, you say, I'm not ready because you're scared shitless. But it doesn't stop you from saying, I'm full of shit. You know what I mean? What an egomaniac when the real egomaniac shit is you. Because all you do is sit around and judge other people. The bottom line is you're fucking crazy and insane. Really, the drink is going to be. So the only way to learn it is by these repeated humiliations over a period of time. And unfortunately, they don't arrest you for driving while being an asshole. You can be an asshole and drive and go to work and hold down a job. You know what I mean? And there's no severe consequences except over a period of time. Bad shit keeps on happening to you and you're miserable. You understand? And you never piece it together that had something to do with your thinking. Every once in a while you drink and you have to keep on coming back a day in the AA. And once in a blue moon, somebody actually says, maybe I'm fucking insane and I should listen to that guy. And then you start really working this thing and doing this stuff and giving yourself to God because you want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You want to experience much of heaven. And they say the great fact is this and nothing less. And you start realizing, I think what they're saying is the great fact is this and nothing less, that God has to be the central fact of your life, that you have to become convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is deep, miraculous. He's doing for me what I can't do for myself. I got to devote myself to God. And then you start following God. Instead, then you start going to meetings. You get guys to sponsor you. And you hang around guys to talk about God and talk about this shit. And you stop rolling your fucking eyes at them and making fun of them. And hanging around the parking lot smoking and talking to the girls or talking to the guys and stopping with the bullshit. And you grow the fuck up. And that's how it works. And then you have to learn about yourself over and over and over again by these repeated humiliations. And you learn the value of suffering. But you got to do that over a period of time. And, you know, after about 20, 25 years, as alcoholics, you start learning a lot of lessons about who you are and what you are. And every time you learn the lesson, every time you go through the shit, there's another story attached to it. So we become storytellers, that's all it is. Our stories disclose in a junk way. We don't have any stories. Our stories are like, you don't understand, it's not my fault, I didn't do anything wrong, you know, it's just bad breaks and misunderstandings, you know, and we sit around thinking we're okay, and every once in a while, when we're not listening, when we're not texting or watching TV or listening to the radio, all of a sudden we hear this voice, you're an asshole, you're going to kill yourself. And it's sort of like something that runs through our lives for our entire life. No matter what's going on, you're an asshole. You know, I'm going to kill myself. I'm such an asshole. I'm never going to get this. I'm an asshole. You look around and see you saying that shit to you. You're the only one in the car. And so the person who's saying that to you is you. You're saying that to you because that's what you really think about yourself. That's your reputation with you about you. That you're an asshole and you're never going to be okay. That's the bottom line. So how do you, let me ask something. You got rid of the booze. How are you going to get rid of that shit? How are you going to get rid of that shit? How are you going to do that? How are you going to get rid of that shit, big shot? How are you going to get rid of the I'm an asshole, I wish I was dead? How are you going to stop that shit from happening? You buy the car, you get the girl, you're driving around, and all of a sudden you're feeling great, and then you worry about making the payments, you worry about this, you worry about that, and all of a sudden the voice comes, just what an asshole you are. Such a jerk. How are you going to get rid of that shit? And that's the real alcoholism. That's what centers your mind. That's what centers in your mind, not your body. And here's the deal. You don't even realize that that's a problem because you've been doing that shit all your life, so you're sort of used to it. That's alcoholic thinking. You don't even think it's a problem. You don't even realize it's a problem. And even if you realize it's a problem, you wouldn't know how to get rid of it because you've never thought any other way. You don't even think there's another way of doing it. And you're not going to talk to anybody about it. Because even though you don't give a shit what other people think about you, your entire life is worrying about what other people think about you. So you're sure as hell not going to tell somebody that you walk around telling yourself you're a worthless piece of shit. You know what I mean? You may tell some stories. So you're pretty much fucked if you're an alcoholic. Right? So Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they solve their common problems, help others to recover from alcoholism. The only prime membership desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees. For your membership, we self-select through our own contributions. Say he's not alive. When he sects the nomination, politics, organization, Does not wish to, does not wish to what?
Engage
in any controversy. Our primary purpose is to stay sober, help other alcoholics achieve a sobriety. Who's doing how it works? what did you thought I forgot? You thought I forgot? Is that what happened? I mean, I told my wife I finally have emotional sobriety because I'm not alert. I'm not worried about it because all I do is think of what did she say? I can't believe you said that. I can't believe just alcoholics do that. The wrong duties of others, fancy than real, imaginary shit drives us crazy because we have the ability as alcoholics to read people's fucking minds. Like the two psychiatrists pass themselves in the hall. One says hello, the other one says, what the fuck do you mean by that? You know what? I mean, we're just fucking mind readers, you know? But somehow, some way, when this emotional sobriety hits, you just stop paying attention. 99% of your problems is that you, I'll tell you what, I never have an alcoholic who's ever shared a problem with me where there hasn't been a preceded by a bunch of thinking. Everybody who's ever called me up with a problem says, listen, I was thinking the other day. I said, whoa, stop. No, let me explain something. I was thinking, I said, no. Were you thinking? He says, yeah, but let me tell you what I was thinking. No. I've spent my entire life not to think the way you think. I don't want to hear it. You got to stop that thinking shit, you know? That's our whole thing, Yugi. So I've spent my entire life to get to the point where I don't have to think. You'd be surprised how great a life you can live if you just stop thinking. Because 90% of the shit that's going on around you doesn't involve you. It doesn't actually involve you. You know, it has absolutely nothing to do with your life. And out of the 5% that's left, out of the 10% that's left, you know, like 8 or 9% of that, there ain't fucking nothing you can do about it anyway. And maybe there's like 2% left. You're like an ant on a log going down a river. Every once in a while, the log goes to a bend in the river. You think you're steering the fucking log. But the log's going. You know what I mean? You can like position yourself on the log like a millimeter here, a millimeter there. To get less wet, and that's pretty much what we do in AA, if you get a sponsor or something like that. Otherwise, forget it. You know, you're fucked. You know, it ain't gonna be any better than that. But if you believe that there is a God in heaven, like they say, you know what they say in the big book? It says, great fact is this, nothing less. That God is the central factor of our lives. You know what it says in the big book? I don't care what it says in the runes. I know the runes say we're spiritual, not religious, and all that fucking bullshit. That's alcoholics saying that they're better than everybody. You know what that is? Alcoholics don't like self-righteous people, and then they become the most self-righteous bastards in the world. They say, well, we're spiritual, not religious. We look down on spiritual religious people. We are spiritual. No, you're a fucking asshole is what you are. Also, you don't own that territory. You're an evil bastard. You're a selfish, evil bastard. You look down on people that go to church and tithe and help other people. And are stable and raise kids because you're fucking spiritual, not religious, because you go to A fucking A and you haven't killed anybody lately. Self-centered, self-righteous prick. Give me a break. I'm spiritual. It's an alcoholic way of saying to themselves, I'm better than everybody else. And they look down on churches and they don't realize that shows me they're not sober. Because my big book says, as alcoholics, we never apologize for God. All men of faith have courage. They trust in God. They let him demonstrate our lives. It says we're on a new basis of trust and relying upon God. As a matter of fact, it says we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. Don't tell me about your fucking prejudice or your resentment about organized religion because somebody spanked you or the priest said something bad to you or you got all screwed up over that. Don't tell me. I don't want to hear that you're 20 years sober and you're still pissed off at the Roman Catholic Church. I don't want to hear about your bullshit. Like all Roman Catholics are bad, or all Protestants are bad, or all Jews, you know, because that's religious and I'm spiritual. I don't want to hear that bullshit. You got nothing to tell me. All you're telling me is that you're resentful and you're not happy. And there's a whole group of people that you've just put in a bucket that you hate, like Bill Wilson, who encouraged church membership. He said it's not absolutely obligatory in AA, but most of us, including Dr. Bob, including all the founders, except one guy, Jim Burwell, you know, who was an atheist and he ended up drinking. You know, why don't you learn a little history about AA? Learn a little history about the Oxford Movement. Learn about what you're really about. Learn about a book that says your real reliance. You don't know whether we'll know you guys. It's okay, because God will determine that, and you guys must learn your real reliance has to depend upon Him. See to it your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass. You encounter. Learn about what the fuck you're involved in here. What this deal is really about. You know, try to figure out what it's really about, because that's your only solution, because the 12 of 12 says, if you really want to not be dependent upon the things of this world and worry about the things of this world, which is the only thing you guys worry about, true independence from the things of this world depends upon God, because somehow, some way, if I'm not focused on God, I start focusing on the blondes, brunettes, and redheads, and the cars, and the money, and it drives me crazy. And believe me, it's a short drive. Because I'm not spiritual. I don't own that territory. I'm a material man. That's why it says in the sixth step, except that's the one that separates the men from the boys. And the men are those who are trying to basically, you know, grow in the image and likeness of their creator. And do whatever they can to do that. No half measures that avail you nothing. God is either everything or it's nothing. And guess what? AA takes a stand. God is everything. Guess what? It takes a stand against atheism. I know you think atheism is cool. I know you think AA encourages atheism. There's a chapter in the book called Chapter to the Agnostics. And here's what the chapter basically says. You can read it if you want. It says, this sort of thing can have to be abandoned. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life would have helped us, we would have gotten rid of it. We would have been well a long time ago. But it didn't help us because we were powerless over to sticking to it. So the real problem centers our mind, not our body. We got to, that's why we wrote a book where we're going to talk about God. And by the way, it says, and here's where alcoholics get pissed off. Here's where alcoholics get pissed off. You know why? Because the more they're pissed off at God, the more it shows how sick they are. Being pissed off at the idea of God is a consequence of being diseased. It says it in the book. Unless you're stupid. But of course, I come from the John Wayne school of alcoholism. You know, I like what he says. Life is tough. Life is tough, and if you're stupid, it's even tougher. You know, so if you don't understand that, it's just because you don't have any discernment. When they say, when we start saying God is everything, and alcoholics get, and they say, and alcoholics, as soon as you say that, they go crazy. They get pissed off. What they're saying is, alcoholics who are in the disease can't handle it. You know, what's that story? A few good men, the truth, you can't handle the truth. So being pissed off at God, I don't care if you got 30 years, just tells me you're not, all it says to me is you're not sober. Not the sobriety I want. I know Bill Wilson wasn't. I know Dr. Bob wasn't. Because at the end of his story, he says, if you're an atheist or an agnostic, atheist or an agnostic, I have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from what you're talking about in this book, I feel sorry for you. I pity you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. So you do this any way you want to do it. I mean, but I know what the big book says, and I know what's worked for me. And I didn't come into here like a holy roller or because I was, you know, into the church thing. I was into the Playboy Club and American Express and all that shit, you know, I was into the other stuff, the pleasure shit. Take my mind off of how worthless I was. So who's going to read How It Works? Go ahead.
Rarely have we seen a person fail who has clearly followed our path. We're going to recover people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. These men and women who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. They're such important. They are not at fault. We've seen women born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. Many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Their stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. You decide you want what we have, they're willing to go to any length to get it, you're ready to take certain steps. But some of these we balk, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. We could not. With all that earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. But those that tried to hold on to the old ideas, and the result was nil, so we would go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But that one who has all power, there is one who has all power, that one is God, so find him now. Half measure availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked for protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. When we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives become abandoned. aim to believe that our power greater ourselves will restore us to sanity. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over here, God, and our students. 4, research our fearless world and for ourselves. 5, admit to God for ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, when we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly ask to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so was to them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics to practice these principles while our affairs. The names exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress and spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholics who do not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power to remove their alcoholism. C, that God is good.
And the traditions.
I'm on to an alcoholic. Our commonwealth there should come first. Personal recovery depends on engagement. 2, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, loving God as He expresses Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose to carry its message to alcoholics or to the alcoholics who suffer. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or run the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige diverse from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, or our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to just principles before personality.
Thank you so much. So one of the gifts I was given, and it was a real gift from God when I was given in here, and it may not sound like one much. There is a step before the steps. If you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready to take certain steps unless you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it. There are people that will come in here. And they don't want what we have. They want what they have. They don't want what we have. They want whoever we is. Whoever we is. There's a we in here. You may find a we one of these days. You might start saying, he's part of my we. If you're sober 20, 25, 30, 40 years, whatever it is, you're going to be talking about the men and women in your lives, because the person you're going to become in the next 5 or 10 years can depend upon the people you hang out with. And the books you read, will depend upon who you hang out with. You will model yourself after other people, because one of the consequences about being an alcoholic is you're a follower. You're not a leader. Next time you think you're a leader, just look around and see who the fuck is following. So what'll happen? You're the guy, you're the alcoholic, you're the guy that walks into the bar worried about what everybody's going to think about you and how you're going to fit in, and then you take a couple of whacks of that booze and you start thinking you own the group. You know what I mean? You're the guy who needs something to juice him up to make him feel like he's almost okay. Or in charge. You are not a leader. You are a guy who's going to whore himself out in every way possible to whatever group he's in so that he can blend in. You're a guy, you are a junkie for people's affection, attention, and a junkie for acceptance. And the one thing you can't stand under any circumstances is anything that even looks like rejection or people looking down on you. You have no ego whatsoever. You don't have an ego problem. You have no fucking ego. You know what I mean? You have no self-esteem or self-respect. You're like zero. You know? I mean, if you're not, that's a consequence. And that affects how you act and what you do and what you think about yourself and how you think about other people. You're a gossiper. You go into bars wherever you are and you love to talk bullshit and shit about other people and judging with other people. And the greatest thrill you have in your life is when you're talking shit about somebody behind their back and the other person's agreeing with you. Because somehow, and you don't even understand this, it makes you feel better about yourself. Somehow, when you think bad shit about other people and talk about other people, you are compelled to do it because when you gossip, it makes you feel good about yourself. Because you're such a sorry son of a bitch. You feel so crap about yourself, and the only thrill you get is putting down other people and hating other people. That's why you live a miserable fucking life. You know, so you might as well, hey, listen, and what's good, now I know I say some tough stuff. I understand what you disagree with. You say, well, he said the word fuck, or he said that. You use whatever I say against me to disregard everything I just said. Because that's what alcoholics do. They say, well, did you hear he said the word fuck, he said prick, he said this and that. Deal free, because you know it doesn't really matter. There's only 1 in 200 make it to 20 years. And not every one of them is happy because we have this great thing called alcoholism. It's called alcohol. And every 2 years, the alcohol comes through and wipes out all the fucking bullshit. All the wise guys and all the bullshit artists and all the guys that aren't really doing this thing and are thinking they're cool, they get wiped the fuck out. They drink, they drug, they overdose, they go to jail. And that's how we purify the group. Otherwise, if everybody stayed here with all their bullshit, you know what I mean? We'd be having fist fights every day. Yeah, I mean, this place would be, filled with maniacs. But we've got this great thing called alcohol. So you either get this thing and you come around to, quite frankly, if I may say it, my way of thinking. Okay, cancel that now. Big Book's way of thinking. Or you just live a miserable fucking life. You get wiped out with drinking. And you get to be one of these guys that say, oh, well, I've been around Dave for 23 years. How long have you been? Oh, I've been around the program for 23 years. You know? How much time do you have? He's like, 30 days, you know, or whatever. Say shit like that, you know? So, here's the deal. So I am, so my wife, my first wife tells me, you come home drunk all the time, I'll leave. Come home drunk one more time. This is, I'm 72 now. So this is when I'm like 26. Somebody do the math. How many years ago was that? So I was 26 when she told me that. Had a wife and a child, beautiful house on Miami Beach. I mean, she tells me, come home drunk one more time. I'm leaving here. I'm as sober as I am right now. Physical. Not mentally. So I get in my car and I drive down the street to my office down at the Metro and Justice Building, because I was a division chief in the state attorney's office trying murder cases, so I wasn't a stupid guy. And I stopped the car at the line and I say, what the fuck did she mean by that? If you come home drunk and we're talking 12 words, it's very esoteric, very hard to piece that together. And of course, that night I came home drunk and that was the end of my marriage. And that's a consequence of being an alcoholic. Whenever an alcoholic hears something or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him, or pisses him off, or he doesn't like it. So if anybody's disturbed by anything I said, just whatever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So you should thank me for giving you a spiritual fucking MRI right now. You can figure out what the hell is wrong with you. Why you're so pissed off. You know, this is because words probably doesn't even apply to you. I'll probably change my mind on the way home. It'd be stupid for you. I'll be honest, just, I can't believe I said that shit to those people. I don't believe any of that shit, you know? I mean, at these prices, what do you expect? You know? The truth, you know? I mean, so in any event, that's a consequence of an alcohol. So when I one of the things that happens is when I came to AA, this is like a story. This is my story. There are stories disclosed. I got 3,000 stories after I came here. I can only do two or three. So one of the things that happened when you come into AA, one of the gifts I was given is the gift of not wanting to drink. I was ready. Some people come in here and not, they don't want what we have. They want what they have. Some people want what we have, but they're not willing to go to any length to get it. They're just not willing to go to any length to get it. Very few people want what we have and they'll go to any length to get it. And you know, I mean, it's sort of like it, over a period of time, you learn this shit over a period of time, these people fall off or they stop doing stuff and they stop continuing and all that sort of stuff. Because here, if you hang around here with sober people, if you hang out with sober people and you start talking to sober people about your problems, you're going to find that you are going to be, you're going to get suggestions or orders or whatever you want to say to them that are going to tell you to do things that you don't want to do. And the people that are going to get this thing are the people that are going to do the shit that they don't want to do. Not the people that do the shit they want to do, but do the shit they don't want to do. And they're going to do shit. You see, alcoholics like to analyze stuff. Why should I do that? Or that doesn't make any sense or anything like that. Because they want to use their brain on shit. See, when I sponsor somebody, and he comes up to me, he's got 2 years, and he's going nuts. He's saying, I was thinking about this, I don't know what's going on. And I try to talk to him, and they immediately stop. He says, no, you don't understand, blah, blah, blah. I say, listen. You got 2 years, and you've been thinking about this for last month, and you're driving yourself crazy, right? This is right. I got over 40 years, okay? This shit isn't bothering me at all. Okay, we have a choice. We can use your brain on this, or we can use my brain on this. Whose brain would you like to use? Usually these guys are pretty sharp, really, actually. They look at me and says, I think I want to use your brain. Great. Then shut the fuck up and listen. But you see, alcoholics really want to explain themselves. They want attention. They want to explain their thinking. I don't want to. Your thinking is the problem. You're thinking. Just follow directions, for God's sakes. You don't have to understand it. So when I first came in, the thing is I didn't want to drink more than anything else. So when I was told stupid stuff like, you need to make coffee for the group. I don't see anything in the big book about making coffee for the group. I don't understand how if I'm broke and my life is over and they're going to, I don't see how making coffee for the group is going to give me money. But I didn't want to drink. And somehow I got into that, my sponsor, that somehow this guy was responsible for me not drinking and I didn't want to get scared of not drinking. And so I start making the fucking coffee for the group. So the next day I didn't want to go to the meeting because no money had come in and I was depressed. No, I wasn't depressed. Alcoholics don't get depressed. I was very depressed. You know what I mean? Suicide. You know? But I had to go because I had to make the stupid coffee. So I made the coffee for 3 months. The money came in. Everything worked out. 18 months, I made the coffee for that stupid coffee. You know what I mean? And all I did was stay sober and make coffee. Now, what I didn't realize is that when I submitted myself and I surrendered myself to another human being and did shit that made no sense to me, in any way whatsoever, as far as what I thought the problem was, whether I understood it or not, that was the same thing as turning my will and my life over to God. It was the same mechanism. When we turn our will and our lives over to something we can't see, we can't understand, don't even understand how it can help the thing, but we just do it without asking. It's the same, I'm working the same muscle. You understand? I'm submitting myself to something that makes no sense. But you know something, I'm surrendering my ego and my idea and my brain because my best thing got in and I'm going to do what they told me to do. And somehow all of a sudden it starts fucking working. Now what are you going to do when they tell you to pray or do this stuff and it starts working? Now you're really screwed because now you're not drinking, you're happy, and all you've been doing is doing what you're told, which doesn't make any sense. But now what are you going to do? You know, it's working. What are you going to do when it works? Then you don't give a shit whether you understand it or not. You just do it. You know, so I did it because I didn't want to drink. But then the drinking leaves. You don't even think about the drinking. The drinking's gone. 5, 10 years. And now what happens is you're doing shit, but you're not doing it because you don't want to drink. Of course you don't want to drink. And you think, but you're doing it because you want what they have. Because by that, by that time, you have people in your life where you're looking up to, and they're calm, and they're relaxed, and everything like that. And it has nothing to do with the drinking. It has to do with the fact that you realize that you're nuts. You don't even know why you're nuts, and they're not nuts. And you want to be like them. So now you're doing crazy stuff that they tell you to do. Go to Bible study. Whatever the hell it is they're telling you to do, which makes no sense, but you want what they have. So you're doing what they do. Then you're starting to get into the realm of rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now you get into the realm of Dr. Bob in the good old times, where it says things like the books we found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, some of them out of the book of James. That's what they were reading for the first 4 or 5 years before then, when they said thoroughly called up. Now you get into the realm of where they start saying we encourage church membership. Is it obligatory? No, it's extra credit. Now you realize that the guys that are really the Olympians in this deal, the leaders who are the trusted servants, are the ones that are actually into the extra credit. Because the men, that's separating the men from the boys, because the men are willing to go even further than the bare minimum. Because the bare minimum gets you nowhere, because half measures get you nothing. There's no middle-of-the-road solution. You know, that's the deal. It's everything, and then you start getting into the real deal, and then you start, then you become one of those people that you never apologize for relying upon God. You're not ashamed of relying upon God, because that's your whole life. And you realize that, just like it says in the book, above everything we must get rid of this alcoholism, we must or it kills us, God makes that possible. And you realize that the book says, once you sincerely turn your life over to God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. And you want remarkable things to happen. Being all-powerful, he gives you everything you need. If you stay close to him, perform his work well. And in the book, it tells you his work has to do with you being of maximum service to other people. So when you go to meetings, you talk about shit like this. In meetings, in AA meetings, you talk about God, the Bible, and all shit, and you don't give a shit what other people think about you. You really don't care. You know why? Because you've lost fear of other people. And then you happen to recognize in the book, it says, as part of the promises, you'll lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. And then you speak your mind, because you, who you are and what you are, it doesn't depend upon what some group thinks about you. Boy, what a fucking blessing that is. What a new freedom that is. Being able to be who you are, and more worried about whether you're doing God's work than worried about what some guy sitting next to you in the AA meeting that's not even playing your Visa bill is thinking about. So some guy calls me up. I'm on a relay because the same sponsor, that crazy guy, said I should get on relays. For 8 years, I'm on relay. You call up in Miami-Dade County any Friday night between the hours of 8 o'clock at night and 9 o'clock the next morning, you get me. So nobody got sober during that period of time. You know what I mean? You get me, you know? There's nothing that'll help you learn about alcoholism and how crazy we are and how to deal with alcoholics than doing that shit, okay? And I'm not even going to go into it. I got a million great stories about that. So some guy calls me up. And he talks at around 10 o'clock at night, 10:30, and he's like suicidal and whatever it is, he's going crazy, he's going nuts, you know. And he says, I've got 2 years sobriety and I'm going crazy. And he starts telling me this horror story about his brain and whatever the hell it is, you know, that kind of stuff. Who knows what? But he's got 2 years sobriety. So I ask him, where are you? Where are you? One of the things I ask him is, where are you? He says, I'm in Coral Gables. I'm a member of the Coral Gables group. I happen to know that there's a meeting that's ending in Century and Coral Gables. There's a lot of alkies there. I said, listen to me. There's a group called the Coral Gables group, and there's a meeting that just ended. What you need to do is go over to that group and find somebody there and talk to them about what you're going through. And he says to me this, I'm in the Coral Gables group. Calling me from payphone, and the meeting just ended. And because what happened was, rather than to go up to somebody there and saying, can I talk to you? I have a problem. He made an anonymous phone call to AA to speak to me. Now, you may think that's crazy. And by the way, it is. But what it is, it's the consequence of being an alcoholic. It's part, and everybody has that. And this is why you don't call up a sponsor. This is why you don't have a sponsor. This is why you don't talk to other people. This is why you don't have any intimate relationship with any person on the planet fucking Earth. This is why you don't spill your guts. This is why you feel alone all the time. Because what's in that kid, that inability to talk to another human being and form a true relationship with them and talk about what's really on his mind and listen, is non-existent in you. It's part of your fear of other people. And let me tell you something. Drinking is nothing compared to that shit. And that shit will take you out. And when a person drinks after 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, for 3 months. It's not because he craves alcoholism. It's because of that shit, because he's never been actually sober. That's the shit that centers in your mind, not your body, the fear of other people. That's the stuff. That's why you don't call the guy or the gal or the person. That's why you don't communicate. That's why, you know, above everything else, you want to try to do this on your own. That's why you are doing desperately, deep down. Now, you'll deny it because you're stupid. You'll deny it because you don't know. You'll say, no, I'm an AA, and I understand I have to do the fifth step, and I understand I have to do that. But the truth is, deep down inside, you'll probably do the step, but then that's it. You ain't hanging out with a sponsor. You don't have, you're not going to have an intimate relationship. You're going to do whatever the bare minimum is to do, and then you're going to go out on with your solo life. Not asking questions, not calling up, not following directions, and you're going to wonder why you're so lonely and miserable. That's what you're going to do, because that's what alcoholics do. And that's what 90% of the alcoholics in AA do. They have no real sponsor. Yes, we have a sponsor. They'll tell you, I'll say, what was I saying? Talk to them last week, last month, whatever it is. If I sponsor 10 people, two will actually call me up. Of the two that call me up, one will call me up one time, you know what I mean? And then it's the last time, one guy will stick. You know, I mean, it's just the way it is. We are scared to have a relationship with other people. Because when you feel like a piece of shit, and you know you're a piece of shit, the best thing you want to do is, you know, get close to somebody else. You know, you just want to continue with your thoughts about you using your brain. Did I mention the fact that you're crazy? Your brain thinking about, and guess what you like to think about? You. Your brain thinking about you. And here's the problem. You hate you. You go up to your worst enemy, you, thinking about you and about what's happening to you. It's not a good formula. Not a good formula. You need to go someplace else to get information. So, it's one of the reasons you get involved in the fifth step. The fifth step is just basically an exercise after the fourth step to at least bring this to another human being. The fifth step says, okay, now that you've done the fifth step, this is sort of like what you do for the next 50 years with another human being all the time. This is the kind of relationship you should have with people in your life. This isn't like a one-time deal. This is what you, the fifth step communication is the way you communicate with certain people in your life and have in your life all the time. Because otherwise you're going to be talking to yourself and you don't want to be talking to yourself. It's going to be a bad deal, you know? So I got one more story and then we're going to stop. I don't even know what this has to do with anything, but you know, when the Lord put something in my heart to say, I just say it. I forget. I think this has to do with the third step, or the fourth step, or the eighth step, or the sixth step, or the ninth step, but I'm not sure, but it's a consequence. It's a consequence. It shows you about the steps. What I think it really shows is how you learn about yourself, how you learn about where the selfishness is. So my mom was an alcoholic. As a matter of fact, she died and she had 19 years sobriety. She's a good gal. She was an atheist. Which, you know, look at the karma that's all about. You know what I mean? Look at that deal. She's an atheist in A. She was an atheist in A, but she's a wonderful person. She helped other people. I loved and hated my mom. You know, growing up with a drunk mom. You know, she was a New York broad, smart. You know, had a mouth on her. You know what I, you know, she used to break men in half and shit like that. You know, she's just really into, you know, really a real lush. You know. So I used to hate her, but I loved her. You know, I said I'd never be like my mother, and I turned out to be like my mom. So that's what happened. So in any event, things got so bad at the house, I'd go home and I'd find her lying in the front yard in her negligee drunk. And, you know, it got really crazy. And I was going to college. I couldn't. So I started living with my grandmother. My grandmother. I love my grandmother. Oh, my Nana Ethel. I loved her. She loved me. And, oh, my God. I'm a grandfather. I have 7 grandkids, one more on the way, 8 coming up. And I love my grandmother. And I was a young alcoholic, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20. I was out there drinking and going crazy on Miami Beach and looking for her, you know. I wanted what she had. I was willing to go to A-Lane to get it. I'm with a pack of wolves, guys, and we're working the strip. You guys know where the strip is? I'm Miami. Yeah, we're working the Sunny Isle strip, you know, looking for tourist ladies and shit like that. You know? And I'm coming home at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. This is my grandma. She's like in her 60s and 70s, my grandfather. And I'm like, you know, and my grandmother's the one saying, you know, Russell, you're basically a good boy, you know, and that kind of shit. And, you know, whenever she'd always give me, you know, like money and everything like that, that kind of stuff. So I love my grandma. My grandma was the person that I knew in my life that loved me unconditionally. I could do anything, you know, and I could be Hitler. She'd love me. It wouldn't matter. So the night I did my fourth step, which I'm not going to go into the fourth step thing, and I did it like they did in the book with the four lists and the chart and all that. So the night I did my fourth step, I came home after I went to a meeting. Then I came home. My grandma died. I was closest to, well, I was closest to. I never had a chance to make amends to my grandma. Never had a chance to, you know, do the A-step list. I never had a chance to make amends to my grandma. She died. So we go fast forward about 2 or 3, 4 years. I got about 5 or 6 or 7 years sobriety now. And, you know, working the steps and doing all the bullshit and everything. And I have a younger brother who's he's actually an NA for many years. And he's always, I'm the oldest kid. I'm the oldest son. You know, I'm the guy who went to law school, became a lawyer, all that shit. And then I have a middle brother and then my youngest brother. And my youngest brother is the one that we all take care of. You know what I mean? Everybody in the family has, you know, and she's the one, you know. So I get a call, and I'm lying on my couch at home, you know, and I get a call, and it's my youngest brother. And he says, Russ, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. He says, I just wanted to ask you. He always, like, takes a long time. I hope I'm not disturbing you. I want to, you know, talk to you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I said, what is it already? I mean, you can talk to me. I mean, it's 8 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? Go ahead and ask me the question. Because I know it's going to be about money. I just know it's going to be about money. There's no way this kid would call me up except it's about money. You know? And I don't know. I'm thinking now, looking back, that one of the reasons he does all this stuff, is it okay? Is because he's scared of me. I don't know why. I'm the nicest fucking guy in the world. I mean, like, I'm not intimidating. I'm a nice guy, right? Yeah, I'm a nice guy. So he's scared of me. So he calls me up. I said, what is it, Jeffrey? He says, well, I said, what do you want? You know? And he says, well, I was wondering whether it was possible, whether I could, borrow 50. It's about money. Do you want money? Is that what it is? He says, I need about $50. You need $50. Is that what you need? $50? And it's got to be now. It's got to be tonight. Tonight. You got to come over at 8 o'clock tonight on a Friday night to get $50 from me. Is that what you're saying? He says, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I'm like being rough on him. And I got to be honest with you. I got to be honest with myself. I think to a certain extent, you know, first of all, I don't like giving out the money. I don't like that he calls me up and late. Now, I don't like subsidizing like a fucking 30-year-old, you know, whatever, how old. You know, I don't like even being put in that position, you know what I mean? And the bottom line is I'm sort of thinking, I think in the back of my head, if I give him a hard time, maybe he'll stop calling me. Said, okay, you want the money? Come on over, Jeff. I mean, if you got to have it, come on over. Jesus, I'm thinking about him. And you know what happens? I start thinking about him. You know what I start thinking about? I start thinking about my grandmother. My grandmother, no matter what I did in my life, if I said, Randy, can I have 20 bucks? I tell you, she'd always give me the money. She never gave me shit. She always gave me the money. And the only thing my grandmother did, I still remember it to this day, is she would be sitting in the same chair, chain smoking cigarettes, saying, I'm worried about your Uncle Jerry. I'm worried about your Aunt Joan. I'm worried about your mother. She spent her whole life worrying about people. All she cared about is other people in the family taking care of other people in the family. Her whole job, you can call it code of band, whatever, was trying to do whatever she could to take care of other people in the family. I started thinking about my grandmother and all this sort of shit and what my grandmother wanted me. My grandmother would want me to take care of my brother. She would want me to take care of my brother. So my brother came to the door, I said, look, here's the 50. You need, and believe it or not, this is true. I said, you need any more? And he was so scared, he said, no, that's okay. And he backed out. You know, and to this day, as a matter of fact, he asked me some money, for money the other day, and I started to get upset, and then I said, what the fuck are you doing? You know, you're supposed to take care of this kid. Do you think for one second I would even be, forget about having the store, even thinking this shit, if I wasn't sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and I hadn't gone through a fourth step and an eighth step and a fifth step and a ninth step? Do you think I'd even be thinking about this shit? You know something? First of all, you wouldn't have gotten money. The phone would have been hung up and I would have said, don't call me back again. Get a fucking job. Think any of that would happen? You know, the truth is that everything I've gone through in AA, and everything I've had to go through, and every step I've had to take, has changed me. Has gone into that thing that Dr. Young says, that what is it, that psychic change, where ideas, emotions, attitudes that are the drive, guiding force of these men's lives are shifted to one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Over a long period of time, working these steps, I've become a different person. But even though I've become a different person, I would never say I'm spiritual, not religious. I would never. Because I tell you, I know me. I know who I am and what I am. I know what I had become and what I was. And I know what I could become again. And I know that outside of God's grace and my focusing on Him and my realizing what He's done for me in these steps, I have become the same asshole I was, you know, when I said, I wonder what she meant by that. That's, you want to know who I am? You want to know who I am? You check out who I was before AA, before God. You want to know who I am? Check out the kind of person I was. Don't look at me now. Look at me the way I was before God got a hold of me. Because anything that's decent about me now, I can tell you this, that's attractive or decent, is because of something God came in and took care of and changed. You know what I mean? Because if I was the same guy I was when I was, you know, 25, 26, 27, 29, 30, I'm an evil son of a bitch. Now, I'm not Jack the Ripper. I mean, that's what I tell myself. Well, at least I didn't murder anybody. That's pretty much my standards. I'm not a serial killer, you know? But I'll rip people's hearts out. I'll hurt them. I know who and what. That's what this disease is all about. That's why these steps are so important. Thank you very much. I have nothing more to say.